live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Jessica Blaylock.
Well, almost. It's very close. That's the best, actually, we could do because apparently we never expected me to be hosting Jaguars
Well, you
today.
And Dempsey's voices sound very similar, so.
You know, I think I get louder when the headphones go on, too, so, you know, very close. So welcome into Jaguars Today. We are so excited to be here at Everbank Field in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. We've already said good morning to the likes of very famous people such as John Osier, such as Ryan O'Halloran, such as Patrick Kavanaugh, Dave DeCandis, Brian Sexton.
Dave Caldwell.
And, oh, yeah, Dave Caldwell, the general manager. We're hoping, like heck, he's going to stop on by at some point over the next 2 hours and spend a few minutes with us talking about some fun holiday topics. But until then, we have got so much to do, Jessica. Today is Wednesday, Christmas Eve. Merry Christmas Eve to everyone. Hope everyone's in the Christmas spirit, excited about what's to come, spending time. Hopefully you have time off, spending time with the family. And, of course, hearing from rookie quarterback Blake Bortles, the rookies that you talked to yesterday in the locker room about their biggest challenge so far in their first season. We've got the Honda driver on the NFL and the state in football history. And, oh, yeah, some fun Christmas stories.
By the way, I believe that I'm going to finally be in the Christmas spirit this afternoon when I start
Not until
wrapping
afternoon?
My presents and listening to Christmas music.
Didn't you already wrap some presents?
Those were for Frank Frangie. They were not presents that I had purchased myself. But I do, I mean, I like wrapping gifts, so I volunteered to do it, and had a lot of fun. And I got to walk away with his leftover wrapping paper, bows, boxes. So,
ooh,
yeah,
score.
Jackpot. But let me just say that I'm pretty tired. It's been a long couple of weeks, but we're going to give you 2 good hours. But I do have to point out that I'm typing up some notes to myself, and I spelled Cincinnati incorrectly, which is not a big surprise. I'm not a strong speller, but I spelled it so wrong that when I clicked on it to try and get it corrected, it said no spelling suggestions. Let me see if I can pronounce exactly what I wrote. The Cincinnati Bengals. The Cincinnati, C-I-N-C-I-N-C-A-N-N-I-T-T-I. That's not how you spell Cincinnati. It's not even remotely
I don't think that's
close.
How you spell anything.
My goodness.
But that's okay, because you know what? Where you lack spelling, I've got that.
Okay, good. So maybe you can come and correct Cincinnati for me.
I certainly can.
So, yeah. But are you ready for Christmas? I mean, I obviously am not. I've still got quite a bit to do before I head over to my parents' house this afternoon. But
okay,
are you in a good position for Christmas morning?
Not even a little bit. I ran into Will Blackman on the way in. He was walking out. And, you know, we exchanged Merry Christmases. And his wife is about to have a baby
yes,
girl.
Yes, congratulations to
yes,
them.
So exciting. And so he asked me, are you ready for Christmas? And I said, well, I have not bought my first present. And he's like,
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, that's correct. I also have been a wee bit busy and have not been able to spend the amount of time that I needed to in order to do some Christmas shopping. So
you're saying
today,
it's going to be a gift card heavy Christmas?
No, it's gonna happen today. As soon as Jaguars Today is over, I'm going to meet my mama and we're going to go out and hopefully get exactly what I need. I don't have a ton of people to buy for, so I'm not stressed about it.
That's good.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Maybe we'll go to lunch, have a few drinks, and then go Christmas Eve shopping.
Oh, well, that's the best thing to do.
And
you don't
right?
really care about that budget.
Exactly.
Sure, yeah. You know what?
I planned on 50, but just maybe 150 is okay,
bring it all up. Throw it in the bag. It's cool.
Too bad I did
about
that.
Boxes.
Too bad I did that Nordstrom debit card instead of the Nordstrom credit card.
Oh no, dang actually it. Probably better, because then debit it comes out right away. Credit, it's so easy to let it add up, and the next thing you know, you get that bill at the end of the month, and you're like, "I'm sorry, what did I really spend this much money in Nordstrom's?" And the answer is yes.
Well,
yes,
I've never
you did,
been
and now
one
you have to pay for it. Hey, we have a good question of the day.
We absolutely
by the way,
do.
That has to do with Christmas.
We certainly do. Tom Bush Family Dealerships fan feedback spotlight question of the day. When you wake up tomorrow morning and there's a bunch of presents under the tree, and then you get to the one that you know has a Jaguars jersey in it, and you go to open it, which player's jersey do you want to find and unwrap? That's the question.
Can I go ahead and answer? Do we hold off our answers for a while, or can I jump right in?
Normally we hold off our answers, but today is a special day, and I think you can jump right in.
Really? Okay, good. Yeah. I want to jump
There's
right
no
in.
Such thing as delayed gratification anymore.
Yeah, let's just do this. Okay, so
Eve.
I am going to go with Denard Robinson.
Number 16.
For a couple of reasons. One, I just really like Denard a lot. He's so much fun to talk to in the locker room. He's always been super easy to work with. Such a nice guy, really funny. We had him on Helmets and Heels earlier this
we
year.
We had dinner with him after.
Jordan Todman. And just
blast.
Had a blast. I mean, he really is. He's great. As is this entire Jaguars locker room. It's such a fun group of guys to work with. I mean, I feel so lucky that, you know, yeah, it's tough when you don't win a lot of games, but it's such a great atmosphere and a great locker room and a great culture that Dave Caldwell and Gus Bradley are creating here in Jacksonville. And I mean, it really pays off when you walk in there and get to talk to a lot of those guys. So, that's one reason. And two, it's been so cool to see his progression. Obviously, it's disappointing the way the season ended with, the injury to his foot and the tear and everything. And, you know, production fell off a little bit before, that point, but he's a guy that's just, he's worked so hard, you know, came in as a rookie last season, obviously was a quarterback at Michigan. They wanted him to be kind of a utility type player, catch passes, run the ball, maybe run wildcat formation, you know, so many things on his plate that he ended up just struggling with all of it. You know, ball security was a huge issue. What could have been a key play for him last season, running that touchdown in, he fumbled right before the goal line. You know,
and he
just
had the hand injury too.
Right. So, you know, just a lot of issues. But he's a guy that Dave Caldwell saw a lot of potential in. He's a guy that Gus Bradley believed in. He's a guy that worked so hard during the off season, putting in the extra work to correct all of those problems. And I think the results ended up showing up on the field this year. A big part of that being all of that work that he did in the offseason, and a big part of that being them simplifying the game plan and what they were asking him to do. So, you know, I would love to open up a present tomorrow. If I had a Jaguars jersey in one of those boxes for me, I think I would go with Denard Robinson.
I like that pick. I'm going to go on the other side of the ball. This is someone who just made a huge payday in the last game against the Titans.
Give me that money sign. Let me see that money sign.
All day, baby.
I love it.
And he was just last night voted as an alternate for the Pro Bowl. He is second in sacks among all defensive tackles in the National Football League, so he really should not have been an alternate. But I'm going to go with big number 99, Sindarik Marks. And like you said, we had Sindarik on Helmets and Heels, just like we did Denard Robinson. And what a personality. I remember looking down at the clock, and we were certainly behind, and we were supposed to be going to break, but we were having so much fun talking to him. And at one point he said to Donna and I, "So I guess I'm a little long-winded." And I thought, you know what? That's perfect for a show like this. We don't really, you know, want to go in one direction. It doesn't have to be all football. Let's talk about Clash of Clans for 25 minutes.
Let's play the golf game.
Right. Let's play the golf video game. And he is just someone, you can tell that family's really important to him, and he plays with such spirit and such passion. And supposedly he's a good basketball player too. I would love to see him play basketball because he's such a big guy. You don't expect that from him. I know. I won't exactly want to play against him, but I'll be on the sidelines by far cheering for Sindarik. That's the jersey I want.
Yeah, no, and that's a great pick too. I mean, it's so easy to name so many guys. I mean, be it Denard Robinson, be it Sindarik Marks, you know, be it Blake Bortles and some of these rookies who have made contributions like Marquise Lee and Aaron Colvin. So yeah, I can't wait to see people's responses, but
I thought about picking Colvin just because
really
of everything that he
has
to
gone
overcome,
through.
Right, and then getting to know him as well. That's the greatest part to me about being around this organization is you really get to know people off the field and away from the side of football. And you get to kind of see who they are if football wasn't in their lives. And I've never had that opportunity before until this season. And I love it. I mean, these guys are just full of personality.
Yeah, I mean, they're all like that.
And
they genuinely are all like
that. And they're so excited to be here. And I really don't think that the record in that locker room matters. I think it's a consistent effort to every single day improve upon yourself. And when you have that, you have momentum and you look forward to the next practice instead of someone screaming at you and telling you that you're not getting any better.
Yeah, well, I think the record matters. I see what you're saying. I mean, obviously, I think at the end of the day, wins and losses matter. And that's something even I talked to Tyson Alualu about. You know, when you look at this team, do you have to step back and think, okay, this is a work in progress. This might be a long-term project. And he said, yeah, you know, we get that. But at the end of the day, still, you got to win ball games. So I totally get the point you're making. But yeah, I think what you're saying is, culture is just as important, and a unified locker room is just as important, and constantly getting better is important, and playing at your best. All those things matter just as much as what the wins and loss column says at the end of the day.
Well, if you have a group of veterans, then I think the wins and losses are what you live and die by. When you have a group of rookies, you kind of know that this is what you're going to get the first year.
Right.
And they definitely need that offseason to kind of take a little, even though it's going to be hard work, take a little bit of a break, because it's going to be an easier offseason than they had last year coming straight from college and then the combine and all that stuff.
Yeah, and we're going to, like you mentioned earlier, we're going to talk about the rookie class. Is something we discussed on Helmets and Heels last night. I had a chance to catch up with five rookies in particular yesterday to talk to them about what the most difficult aspect of being in your first year in the league has been. And it's really interesting to see from each one of their perspectives what the biggest challenge was. So that's something to look forward to. That's coming up in just a little bit.
Yes, indeed. All right. So today, Christmas Eve, again, the fan feedback spotlight question of the day brought to you by Tom Bush, Family of Dealerships, is which player's jersey do you want to open tomorrow morning? You have, what, an active roster of 53 to decide from. And we hope that you choose something other than maybe the obvious answer.
Ooh, Telvin Smith would have been
Telvin
a good
Smith
one
is a really good one, especially if you're a Seminole, for all those Florida State fans out there that I know are eagerly anticipating New Year's Day. All right, so when we do return, you will hear from rookie quarterback Blake Bortles. You're listening to Jaguars today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Welcome back to Jaguars Today. It is a very special Christmas Eve edition, especially because there are no men in here, Jessica. Jaguars Today normally is full of guys. Today, taken over by Jessica Blaylock, Lauren Brooks. And because it is a Wednesday, today is brought to you by Metro Rooter. For all size plumbing jobs, residential, commercial, industrial, septic systems, restaurant grease trap service, and much more. For same day service, including Saturday and Sunday, the right people, the right equipment. They've been serving Jacksonville since 1978. Visit them at MetroRooter.com or 904-695-1911. Again, thanks to Metro Rooter for sponsoring our show today.
You know what? We might get Ryan O'Halloran in here in the next segment.
Oh,
so
there's equipment manager, hey. Jimmy Luck. Hey, Jimmy. We love when people wave to us. We love the open door policy, and we love that people like Ryan O'Halloran might stop on by.
Yeah, he's over Bob Babich talking right now. Jed Fish going to address the media after that. So we'll get his thoughts on what those two coaches had to say, especially.
They should just stop on in after their press conferences.
Yeah, sure. Hey, Bob. If you're streaming Jaguars today
at your
during
press
your press conference and you can hear this, just swing by. It's cool. No problem. Jed, same goes for you. So we'll welcome anyone that wants to come in.
We absolutely will. All right. Let's hear a little bit from Blake Bortles, who I think despite the ups and downs of the season has really done a fantastic job every week of looking ahead and not spending too much time on maybe the mistakes or what he could have done better. And he had some struggles there for a while with picks. And I really do think that he's been able to kind of learn from his own mistakes and figure out what works best for him as far as game planning.
Well, and that's one of the things that this coaching staff loves so much about him. When they were going to the combine and when they were making trips to schools and looking at different quarterbacks, you know, obviously with the situation with Blaine Gabbert and kind of how that all played out.
Who?
And yeah, I know. mistakes taking a toll mentally. I mean, I think they knew they wanted someone who would be able to have a short memory. You have to do that as a quarterback. Someone who they knew they might be in a situation that they had to go to in his first year playing. So a guy who could handle both taking over as a starting quarterback as a rookie, as far as his performance on the field, and both mentally as well. So, you know, that was something that they saw in Blake. And yeah, I'll give him credit. He certainly week in and week out has not really seemed to be rattled by mistakes, whether they were costly pick sixes, turnovers in the red zone. You know,
there's only really been one time, right, that I remember him on the field showing some frustration.
And yeah.
After that one, I think it was a pick six. Other than that, he's been pretty unflappable, yeah, both on the field and with the media.
Yeah, he really has. So, I mean, a lot of credit to Blake, because it's not easy to come in the situation that he was handed with a lot of youth lining up beside him. So,
especially in front of him.
For sure. All right, he did speak with the media yesterday. I was there and got to listen into his comments. Let's first start with talking about those turnovers. That was the goal in the second half of the season, to cut back on the picks. All right, so from Blake's perspective, what's helped him cut down on those turnovers?
You just get more repetitions at it, seeing it more, becoming more consistent in the decisions that are being made and not being so sporadic and doing different things versus the same look. You know, when you get the same look and have the same play call, you want to do the same thing over and over again so that everybody has a feel for what you're going to do rather than, you know, doing multiple things. So I think that was kind of the biggest thing, is just becoming consistent with decisions.
It's a learning process, Lauren. I mean, for these rookies, the only thing that is going to help is getting out there on the field and playing.
Well, and if I were to ask most Jaguar fans, what completion percentage do you think Blake Bortles has? What do you think a random Jaguar fan's answer would be?
I would say a random Jaguar fan would probably say 40%.
I would have said
along those lines.
Right. I would have said definitely less than 50 is what they'd say. 60.2%.
Yeah.
For a rookie that has been sacked as often as he has, and with an offensive line that is so young, and they're all still learning
receivers
too.
Receivers that are so young.
And right, and then throwing to receivers that are young, especially having Mercedes Lewis out for a lot of the year. I'm so impressed with that stat.
Yeah.
And the stats don't tell everything, but I, you know what, Blake? Hats off to you.
Yeah, I mean, didn't he set a franchise record or a whatever the record was in the game against San Diego, completion percentage for a rookie
mm-hmm.
quarterback? So, yeah, but Gus also talking on Monday about he had a comment saying, you know, he feels like Blake has more answers now. So followed up yesterday on that. Is that What does it mean that he has more answers now as far as the interceptions?
Yeah, you know, I think so. And you know, not necessarily more answers, but I have my answers. You know, I have the answers that I know and that I can get to versus certain looks that I see that are good, you know, for what we do.
Yeah, and again, just learning how to figure things out, especially when you're playing teams like the Texans within a few weeks of each other, the Titans within a few weeks of each other. You're going to go through it once, see what you did right, see what you did wrong, get to watch the game film, and then, okay, have your answer to the situation. Jaguars obviously not looking towards the postseason, but it's still important for them to have a good week from Blake Bortles' perspective.
You know, I think it's just important. You know, we're focused on this week like it's any other week. Obviously, being a divisional opponent, you want to go in and you know, execute your game plan and offense the way you would, you know, if we're preparing to be headed to the playoffs, you know, or anything like that. So, you know, we want to go in and finish the season, you know, kind of on the right foot.
That's exactly what you want to hear from a team. It doesn't matter that they're 3-12. They're preparing like they're going to the playoffs. They're preparing for this week, like any other week. This game is just as important as the rest.
Don't you think that they're going to be going into the offseason with tremendous momentum if they get to knock the Texans out of the playoffs?
My gosh, that would be fantastic. I mean, beating two division rivals back-to-back obviously is huge.
And not getting swept by either one of
them.
You know,
yeah.
Yes, to Indianapolis, but not by either one of them.
Yeah, being able to dash Houston's hopes, that'd be fantastic.
I look forward to the game, even though I'm not necessarily sure we're going to pull it out. But going back to some fun numbers, Blake has had a QBR as high as 66.2 against Tennessee the first time, and as low, poor thing, as 2.3.
Still better than Johnny Manziel.
That's true, against Indianapolis. So when we talk about the ups and the downs of Blake, it, I mean, that's to me, just that puts it in perspective. He has had games where he's had pretty good protection. He's had games where he's used his legs, and then he's had some other games where everything's fallen apart.
It's funny, heading into the draft, there was so much attention on a guy like Johnny Manziel, and not necessarily a guy like Blake Bortles, who his final season at UCF wasn't even sure if he was going to declare for the NFL draft. I think there was one TV station in Orlando that used to go out to UCF games to interview him and get footage and so forth, and now he's the third overall pick in the draft.
Well, and I was at the draft party that 1010 XL put on, and my job was to go out to the crowd and get the fan reaction as soon as we made that third pick overall. And then as soon as it happened, everyone started booing because they all wanted Sammy Watkins. And they thought that Blake was another reincarnation of he who must not be named that you mentioned earlier in Blaine Gabbert. And so right away, I, you know, jumped on the mic that no one else could hear except the producer. And I said, so should I be getting angry fan reaction here, or should I kind of wait until it dies down a little bit? And they said, yeah, give it a few minutes and find some happier fans. And then when I did talk to some fans that were a little bit more knowledgeable, they were really excited about it. They were like, look, I mean, he's 6'5". He's over, you know, what, 230 pounds. He's got...
He's mobile.
Right. He's got all sorts of scrambling ability, and he's got potential because he really is that very smart quarterback, very football IQ driven quarterback. He will prepare. And I said, all right, so now we've got some excited fans.
Yeah, well, needless to say, he's gotten much more media attention here than at UCF. How have we been to you, Blake?
It's been awesome. I mean, you guys have been pretty good. So you guys have been fun to deal with. And I mean, I think the stress-free environment that Gus and Dave really, you know, allowed me to enter and allowed, you know, everybody in this locker room to be a part of, you know, has made things so much easier and allowed us to just go play and worry about getting better.
My gosh, what a different interaction with your starting quarterback than a few seasons ago. I cannot tell you how night and day that is. And I think what a difference it makes in the way that he both carries himself in the locker room, mm-hmm. on the field. I mean, it really does make a difference. All right. So what about Blake's confidence? He's been able to take a look at what he has done well, maybe step back and look at some of the things that he struggled with. Has his confidence grown in what his capabilities are?
Yeah, you know, I think as long as you're learning from everything that's going on, it's a positive, good or bad. You learn from it and you move on and you make corrections. So I think, you know, I'm as confident as everybody in here as they are in me. And I look forward to, you know, finishing the season off and getting out there on Sunday.
All right, again, we know it's important to get a good weekend. What about for Blake personally? Is it important to still get some good couple of days in heading into this game against the Texans?
Yeah, definitely. You know, kind of you don't want to sit here and just go through the motions these last 2 days, because you got months until you get to do stuff like this again. So you want to, you know, use these next couple of days as learning opportunities, like they are, and continue to learn and grow and try and get better and progress, you know, going into this weekend.
The Texans twice in a matter of just a couple of weeks. What's it like preparing for Houston again so quickly?
You know, it's definitely something that I think you kind of have an advantage of, or maybe a disadvantage. They know you better as well as you know them better. But you go back and you look at the notes and all the preparation that was done for the first time you played them, and you review that and you see, you know, we kind of have an opportunity that's a little different where we play them, you know, twice in 4 weeks or whatever. And, you know, you see what they did differently versus, you know, those two games in between and how it differed from what they did to you. So you go study that, and, you know, personnel-wise, they'll be the same. So, I mean, it definitely helps out.
Personnel-wise, they will be the same, but I do think this is a big advantage, and it's going to help the Jaguars tremendously in this game, seeing the Texans again so quickly.
Well, certainly for the offensive line that, like we've talked about time and time again, they are so young. Someone like Sam Young, you know, he gets to see on film what he had never seen before, and certainly what he's seeing on film is a very powerful, intense defensive end in J.J. Watt.
Such a different coaching style here in Jacksonville than what Blake dealt with in Orlando. George O'Leary, obviously a very, very tough head coach. And Jed Fish talked about that, the conversation he had with Bortles heading into the season, where Blake literally said to Jed, be as hard on me as you want. Don't worry about breaking my confidence. Don't worry about, you know, knocking me around a bit mentally with some of the mistakes and things like that. I'll be able to handle it. I'm used to that. So very, very tough coach for Blake in college. That's obviously not Gus Bradley whatsoever.
Nope.
How important was it for Blake to have a head coach like Gus Bradley, especially considering he's taking over as a starting quarterback in his rookie season?
It was good. You know, he's been unbelievable. The way I think he's handled and dealt with everything, you know, the attitude and the way he's treated me has been awesome. The conversations we've had, you know, about football and not about football have really been a lot. I've learned a lot from him, and I look forward to, you know, continuing to learn a lot.
And finally, the key to the game against the Texans, Gus Bradley said, you gotta know at all times where J.J. Watt is out on the field. Blake, how many times have you written the number 99 on your game notes?
Yeah, I just write it once big at the top.
Yeah, you're gonna have to keep an eye out on him. Those are the comments yesterday from Blake Bortles. We have a special guest in the studio.
We certainly do. We had to work pretty hard to get Mr. Ryan O'Halloran in here, but we have done the trick. Ryan, Merry Christmas Eve.
Same to you, ladies. It's a lot more classier in this.
Yeah. That's one thing we bring in. We bring in the class.
We bring in the class.
By the way, for all your listeners, I'm going with the Rick Ballew, which means I'm standing up during the show.
That is true.
That's his classic move.
So you just came from a press conference, sir.
Yeah, we talked to both coordinators.
That was fast.
It was fast because Jed Fish wasn't really interested in talking about the offseason because he said there's concentrate on Houston, so I basically crumpled up my questions and threw them away.
Did you make it in the basket?
Pick it up, throw it in, and then you get the assist and the bucket. That's what I always say.
And the rebound.
Yeah, exactly. But, so you're packing that stat sheet.
But yeah, so they asked Bob Babich about Sundarek Marks. He's going to be in the Pro Bowl game because they named 6 D tackles. Jared McCoy is out, so he's not going to play. And Dominican Sousa in a free agent year, he's not going to play. And then Marcell Dareus got banged up last week, so he may not play. So it's looking like he would Sundarek will get that spot. And it's one thing that Bob said that he obviously has played at a Pro Bowl level. And something he saw coming, you know, he expected going into the season.
You going
to
stick around with us for this next segment for a few minutes?
Sure. by the way, you got to ask me to do an imitation.
Oh, my gosh.
Imitation of Rick Ballew, please.
No, imitation of Bob Babich.
Oh, I thought we were doing Ballew because you were standing
up. Ask you a question. Okay. Coach Babich, what do you think about Sundarek Marks being voted as an alternate to the Pro Bowl?
Goddamn, Tectile, you gotta tell you guys, yo, it's a voting procedure. I mean, he plays at a Pro Bowl level. I take responsibility for him playing well.
Oh my gosh, that's spot on. I love it.
For people who don't know, that is a really good impression. All right, we will be back with Brian O'Halloran coming up next on Jaguars Today with Jess Glaylock and Lauren Brooks on 1010X on 2.5 FM. Welcome back to Christmas Eve edition of Jaguars Today. Jessica Blaylock, Ryan O'Halloran joining us, and Lauren Brooks alongside you on this Merry Christmas Eve. Again, our question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships is which player's jersey do you want to open tomorrow morning under the tree? And Ryan O'Halloran, I just realized we haven't asked you, so what's your answer?
Well, I'm going to give you an answer. It's not a Jaguar.
Oh, it's not a Jaguar. Okay.
The last athlete I ever got an autograph from was Mike Modano, who played for the Minnesota North Stars. Wore number 9, went into the Hockey Hall of Fame last year. So I think when I got his autograph, I was 14. He was 18.
That's awesome.
So, dude, I have a man crush on you.
So a number 9 Minnesota North Stars jersey.
Okay. What about a Jaguars jersey? This is Jaguars Today.
None.
None.
Oh, boo!
You can join my train of
what about Sundarek a Cecil Marks, one?
Or you can join Jessica's train of Denard Robinson.
He's going to need that as a going away present.
Oh, ouch!
Man, is this Ryan O'Halloran, or is this How the Grinch Stole Christmas?
Well, I'm sort of promoting our Sunday paper where we sort of. I told Dave Caldwell in the hallway today. I said, "Read Sunday's paper. I'm going to tell you exactly."
Is it your swan song for Cecil Shorts?
I just don't think there's a place for him right now.
Even as a veteran leader for the young guys?
I think maybe if there's no market, but I think that's going to be an easy decision for the team to make. For him, it's going to be somebody give him a 2-year deal somewhere. Mm-hmm. The thing where Cecil and these other veteran receivers have run into trouble is such a great draft last year for receivers as the Jaguars can.
Mm-hmm. Right. It has to. Right.
Another year coming up of good receivers. So if you're a team, okay, do you draft a guy in the second round or do you sign a veteran? to a two-year deal that costs a little bit more money. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how that market develops.
Well, and everyone pick up your Sunday paper and learn what Dave Caldwell is going to do thanks to Ryan O'Halloran.
I will plug Cecil Shores on one thing. He was voted our Jaguars Media Good Guy.
Yeah, yay,
so
Cecil.
So he'll get his name on the plaque.
And pretty overwhelmingly.
Pretty overwhelmingly. So basically, we vote on the one person who we felt most helped do our jobs. Paul Posluszny last year was the winner, and Cecil this year.
Awesome. Congratulations, Cecil. Hey, attaboy, Cecil. Real quick, what do you think about the year that Sendarek has had? Pro Bowl accolades aside, how would you evaluate what you've seen out of Sendarek?
I think he's been a star. You look at last year, and he tailed off at the end of games in particular and at the end of the year in general because he was playing 15 to 20% more than he should have
right.
because of depth. So he came into the year. My question with Sendarek coming in the year was, it's great that you're going to be playing less. It's great that you're going to be fresh from the fourth quarter. Two things. How will that adjust your mindset? Will he try to do too much because I'm only playing 10 snaps instead of 20? And also, will this team be in position in the fourth quarter of games to take advantage of what he does best, which is rushing the passer as an interior guy? Obviously, they've been in more games, which has helped those sack numbers. But for 8.5 sacks for a defensive tackle, hey, and let's make no mistake here, he's a true defensive tackle. He doesn't move out the end on third downs.
Right.
So he's done it the hard way. He doesn't, he doesn't get chipped by tight ends. He goes against guards and centers. So, hell of a bargain out of contract, and really a cornerstone guy for this team.
I've loved watching him this season, not just his play, but also his antics. They've been fun. And if you'll remember, I got caught on TV fist pumping for Sendarek. So
you were with your friend, Mr. Bud Weiser.
It was Miller Lite, but same difference. Yeah, everyone kept saying, why is she holding a blue Gatorade? And I was like, I don't really want to stay at the beer, but I guess at this point.
I was watching the game the next morning, and they showed it, and I was like, that can't be. Is this she's supposed to be working? I rewound it. That was old LB.
Oh, I'm working all right. I'm working that stands area very hard because I'm trying to get the fan perspective on the games. But no, Sendarek has made me so proud to be a Jaguar fan. I really do think that the depth of the offensive line has helped him greatly.
Defensive line.
Did I say offensive line?
But yes. but you're right. You're right. It's like, one thing these guys, in the OTAs, in the training camp, they all talk about best case scenarios, and they say, well, the addition of Chris Clemens is going to free things up for Sendarek Marks. You're like, all right, we'll see it when we believe it. Well, it did. Chris got off to a slow start. One thing they've already tried to figure out how to get him going next year early. But you look at a guy like Ryan Davis who moved inside it on third down. He had a good start, so that attracted some attention because, any player's better one-on-one than if you're facing double team.
Let me get a quick thought before we let you go. If the Jaguars are going to be able to pull off the upset this Sunday against the Texans, ruin their hopes of making it as a wild card to the playoffs, which is a long shot anyways, but what's a couple of keys to the game for Jacksonville to leave Houston with a W?
Why the first, second, and third keys are turnovers. That was the anomaly of the Tennessee game, is the Jags won without creating turnovers. But you look at the Cleveland game, you look at the Giants game, takeaways, short fields, because this offense is not going to go 80 yards more than a couple times a game. So they can get a couple turnovers, and let's say the Jags think their best chance get that, if you can get a 10-0 or 14-0, 10-3, 14-3 lead, that means Case Keenum, who just got back into town, got to put some stuff on his shoulders, whereas last week they really tried to manage him with Foster, even ran some Wildcats. So, that's to me the key is, for this team right now, is you get takeaways, you get points.
Do you expect more trick plays coming from Jed Fish this week?
We should, because what the hell you got to lose? I mean,
let's see every. I pull out all the stops. Let's just go crazy this Sunday.
What is it from Little Giants? The annexation. Come on, help me out with that word. Of Puerto Rico, the annexation of Puerto Rico. There we go.
As opposed to
annexation.
I'm not sure where you're going with that
as opposed to the vomiting of Jacksonville.
I'm
trying to think what's left in their trick play arsenal. I mean, Denard not being there takes a lot of that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You did the Cetho throwback. One thing, if the fans watching, is Marquise Lee needs 5 catchers for 40, which means they'd be the first team ever with three rookies of 40 catches apiece. Get it to them the first series of the game. Get that out of the way, then move on with your game plan and start to say, are there any other milestones? Because that'd be a good accomplishment for Marquise after the first half of the season, which was basically a zero.
Yeah. Well, don't you think they're going to be targeting Marquise too?
Well, I would target him. Even if he has 5 catches for -3 yards, mm-hmm. throw a couple bubbles. You know, maybe he turns one of those upfield. So, like last year, A. Sanders needed 5 catches for 50, and they targeted him 14 times against Indy. Do it.
That's right. That is the voice of Ryan O'Halloran for the Times Union, covering the team at all times, day and night.
And a fond farewell to Lauren.
Oh, yeah. We haven't talked about that, actually.
No tears. This is a no-tears
Wednesday.
This
is a no-tears zone.
Well, she's not moving.
No, I'm not moving at all.
So, but
I'll be around.
Ace producer.
Thanks, Ryan.
So, and bright light. I mean, some of us got to deal with, like, Blaylock a lot.
I know. I am just the worst. My goodness.
Well, thanks, Ryan. Thanks so much for stopping
by. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Ryan O'Halloran.
We hope you get that hockey jersey opened up under the tree tomorrow.
I'm going to get you the Cecil Shorts jersey now, and you're going to love it, and you're going to wear it.
All right. Real quickly, we are going to hear from some rookies. After we do this date in football history and the 100 drivers around the NFL, which we have been looking forward to all day, because as a producer, I got to do the 100 drivers around the NFL, but I've never gotten to do this date in football history. And it is Blaylock's first time to do the 100 drivers around the NFL. So we are going to get to that after we get, we're going to get to the rookie sound after we get to those two. Coming up next, right here on Jaguars Today on 1010X on 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history. Obviously, December 24th. In 1967, Joe Namath of the New York Jets became the very first NFL quarterback to pass for 4,000 yards. That is a pretty impressive stat. In 1981, the year before I was born, Reggie Jackson announced that he would join Gene Autry's California Angels for the 1982 season. That 1982 is a good year. And then in the year 2000, 36 minutes after the end of the game, both the New England Patriots and the Miami Dolphins were called back to the playing field. The teams had to play the final 3 seconds of the game, which the Dolphins had won 27-24, yet the end result did not change. This Day in Football History is presented by Dr. James J. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done, or if you are just in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 904-620-9225. That's 904-620-9225. In the meantime, visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
The Cincinnati Bengals pulled off that upset of the Denver Broncos this past Monday night. Peyton Manning threw a season-high 4 interceptions, very un-Peyton Manning-like. He's only done that throughout the course of his career a handful of times, but that loss for the Broncos does, of course, mean that New England has secured home field advantage for the playoffs, and we know it's most likely going to be Denver and the Pats in the AFC Championship game, so we can, of course, look forward to the constant comparison of Tom Brady versus Peyton Manning, as if we haven't already gotten enough of that one before, but the Broncos got the best of that matchup last time around. It may work out a little bit differently this year. New England and Tom Brady, they are playing out of their mind. Who could possibly challenge the Patriots or even the Broncos in the playoffs? Could it be San Diego? The Colts, maybe? We'll see what happens. Lauren, I have a feeling, though, it's going to be Denver, New England. And I'm fine with that. That's a game that I would love to see played in the AFC Championship game.
And then who do you predict is going to win that one?
I took, before the start of the season, the Patriots to win the Super Bowl. I think I had them beating San Francisco, which obviously that's not going to happen. The 49ers have been eliminated from the playoffs in the NFC. But what I would ideally like to see is Seattle, Green Bay, Patriots, Denver, Patriots versus Green Bay in the Super Bowl.
Ah, okay.
That's what I'd like to see.
You want some offense is what you're saying.
Yeah, I guess if you look at those quarterbacks, that is setting up for a great offensive matchup for sure.
All right. So today again is brought to you by Metro Rooter, and we are going to get into some rookie conversation now.
Just want to mention though that we're going to be joined.
Oh, do you want to mention a special guest that
we're
going to have?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a big deal. It's not like the general manager of the Jaguars is going to join us in half an hour. Oh, wait a second.
Yes,
he is. Oh, and look at that. He wanted to honor your last
official day
as part of the Jaguar City
program.
That is
very sweet. I don't know if Dave Cullo actually said that or if Ryan Robinson just wrote that on behalf of Dave to make me feel better.
I would take it either way.
But yeah, thank you to Ryan and thank you to Dave for stopping by in about half an hour. And certainly, Dave is not a rookie, but we are going to hear from some rookies now. And Jessica, you came up with a really good question for them, which is what's been the most challenging part of their rookie season? And a question that I think they, like we talked about last night, each answered a little bit differently.
Yeah, well, it's just hard to believe that this season has flown by as quickly as it has. I mean, it happens every year. You know, you're in the middle of training camp, and it seems like week 16, you know, is so far off. And then the next thing you know, you look up, and there's only one game left, and it's just
I remember looking forward to our month off as far as home games, because at that point in the season it was just so much going on, and now it's like I want to go back to October.
I want
to rewind.
It's crazy, but so I just, you know, just started thinking about the fact that this team is so young, one of the youngest rosters in the NFL. The fact that they're not only one of the youngest rosters, but they're starting so many rookies. I mean, my goodness, look on offense alone. Rookie quarterback, rookie receivers,
rookie center,
rookies all along the offensive line, as a matter of fact. You've got some rookies in the secondary. I mean, it's just crazy on both sides of the ball how many rookies are starting and making significant contributions for this franchise.
Rookies on the offensive line. I mean, defensive line.
I
do know the difference.
So, yeah, you know, and I just started thinking about it because so often you talk to players and in their second season, you talk to them about what a difference getting that first year under your belt makes and what a big leap they typically take in their second year, because they spend that first year really adjusting to so much of the professional level. I mean, the speed of the game, the schedule, playing so many more games than you would in a college season. So just all of those adjustments that you have to go through.
I think meeting with the media as often as they do,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I mean, meeting with the media almost every day. The travel schedule, workouts, game film. I mean, I know a lot of that is similar to what you would do in college. But
certainly,
I mean, everything is just, right, it's just on so much more of an intense level. So, you know, there's going to be challenges, especially when you're not just coming into the league as a rookie and getting some playing time and, you know, maybe you're sitting behind somebody and getting to watch. No, I mean, these are rookies that are starting and playing for a significant number of snaps. So just wanted to go around to a couple players yesterday in the locker room and talk to them and get their thoughts on just what's been the most challenging aspect of their first year in the league. Started out with the offensive line, two guys that are making contributions, Luke Bowenko and Brandon Linder. Let's first hear from Bowenko and what he had to say.
Probably the day-to-day grind. I've probably played almost twice as many games as I did last year, so it's just staying focused and staying positive throughout all the ups and downs, and it's easier when you're around like a younger group of guys who've been through it and, you know what you're going through, so that's probably one of the more difficult things.
Yeah, staying positive through the ups and downs. I mean, this is a team that's had some ups and downs, but again, just like Luke said, going through it with a younger group of guys, I mean, they all know what the other is dealing with right now.
That unit has taken a lot of heat, I think, from not just the fans, but media too. So they have to kind of come together and look from within and say, you know, we're not going to listen to the people that maybe don't know exactly what we're going through, or they don't quite see that maybe our technique was better than what they thought. All they see or all they hear is, oh, the offensive line is terrible, right? So I think, especially from going from college, fans don't typically spend a lot of time and media
focused
spend
on
a lot of time
focused
on the offensive line. And
yeah,
then all of a sudden you get to the NFL and there is a lot of heat. But talk about someone in Luke Bowenko that stepped up when, at the beginning in the offseason, we thought the center was going to be Michael Brewster, right, from Ohio State. And
Luke. Then after that, we thought it was going to be Jack McClendon.
Jack McClendon, right. And so Luke was able to step in, and there really has not been that much as far. There's not been very many bad snaps.
I don't even think there's been a drop-off.
And
I mean,
right.
I
that's
think
the most impressive thing
playing
to me.
That position better than probably Brewster or McClendon would have.
Totally agree.
But, you know, a lot of heat for the offensive line, but not a lot of that directed towards Luke Bowenko or Brandon Linder. If anything, those two guys have been pointed out as coming in and playing really well.
Well, and Jeff Logman, the person that I always go to when it comes to lineman discussion, because he knows far more than I do. He'll always know far more than I do. Jeff said that Luke Bowenko is a good center and has the potential to be a great center. And Brandon Linder, who we're going to hear from next, he said, is a great, great offensive lineman already. Like, already in his rookie season. So that's pretty impressive to me.
All right, well, let's go ahead and hear from Brandon Linder.
I think the big thing is just coming in and creating a routine for yourself. You know, every week you have something that you do to get you through. I mean, we've been playing 20 games now, including preseason, so I think that's the big thing.
Yeah, establishing a routine. I mean, just some of the things we just talked about, Lauren, making that jump from college to the NFL, things that you're probably not used to dealing with every day, like an open locker room and talking to the media, and just simple things like that where you've got to make a lot of those adjustments on the professional level.
Well, and if I were to tell you his salary, I think a lot of people would be surprised. He makes $420,000 a year. I feel like that's a pretty good steal that the Jags got for Brandon Linder. Out of Miami. And so I asked Jeff actually yesterday, I said, this was off air, but I said, okay, so I know Brandon really likes to hunt and fish. Is that why you think he's a great offensive lineman?
You can give him a little bit of
special
extra props.
And he said, well, that's a bonus, but that's not why I think he's great.
All right, let's switch it up to the defensive side of the ball. Aaron Colvin, who's obviously played an abbreviated season coming off of that ACL tear in the Senior Bowl. Jags love what they saw in him. Gus Bradley absolutely raves about him as a player. He has come in on a short season and made some big plays for this defense, and he is looking like a very bright spot for the future of this secondary. So from Aaron Colvin's perspective, what's been the most difficult challenge of being a first-year NFL player?
The biggest challenge for me is probably just getting used to being able to adjust. I mean, you got to adjust in the NFL, and things are always changing. Things are always moving around. You never know what's going on. So just being able to adjust is probably the biggest thing.
Yeah, and we talked about this last night, Lauren. Of all of these rookies, Aaron Colvin may be the one who's had to make the most adjustments. First off, just dealing with an unexpected injury, then coming in not even knowing if he was going to play at all his rookie year. He's called upon, comes in, and starts making plays.
And to me, the most impressive part about getting to talk with him that night at Helmets and Heels was that he never lost sight of what he wanted. He stayed positive throughout the entire process. Yes, rehab was difficult, but he knew where he wanted to be. And he stayed focused on learning exactly what he needed to do. And one thing that I guess I had forgotten about, did you know or remember, I guess I should say, and you do, I'm sure, but injured reserve players are not allowed to even be at practice. So if you're on IR, you can't even watch. That's an NFL league rule. And to me, it's like, well, wait a minute. They need to learn and progress through watching too. But Aaron Colvin, not just coming back from the injury and being able to step in, but as well as he's played, I think he has impressed everyone. Although the coaching staff would probably tell you that's exactly what they expected.
And think about this. For him to be able to come in and play as well as he has played, and they're really not be any type of, I mean, he just seemed to jump in immediately and pick it up. And it really blows my mind how easily it has come to him. So if he's playing this well already,
mm-hmm.
Oh man, when I start to think about his second year and his third year and just the progression that Aaron Colvin is going to continue to make, I am so excited to see what his future holds with this franchise.
But Jacksonville is actually going to have a lockdown cornerback. I mean, that's going to be unbelievable. And hopefully, and Gus talked about that this week, hopefully the interceptions will pick up next year. You know, were they surprised that they only had 5 this season? Absolutely.
That is very surprising.
Right.
Very surprising.
So hopefully that's the type of improvement that we see come next season.
And no picks for Jonathan Cyprian.
No.
That is shocking.
But you know what? We still have a game left.
Yeah. So let's get one.
Pick off Case Keenum.
Let's get one in the box.
Get him. I'll take a pick six from Keenum all day.
All right. Well, what about from the starting quarterback of this franchise perspective? What about for Blake Bortles? What's been the most challenging part of being a rookie?
You know, I don't know. I think it's hard, kind of want to sit and go through this week like any other week and really prepare and get ready to go play Sunday. And then after the season, you know, it's kind of a time where I'll definitely go through and reevaluate every game, every experience, everything that happened, and sit down and make a big list of things to work on, things to improve on, and things to kind of stow away in the memory.
Let me translate that answer for you.
I don't have time to think about that question right now. I'm focused on getting ready for the Texans.
Yeah, I was going to say, Blake basically, I'm sure, looked at you and was like, hey, this season is not over. I am not ready to talk about
this. We're preparing like we're going to the playoffs.
Right. We got a game to play on Sunday.
Come back in a few weeks and ask me this question. But I love it. I love that answer.
From the fan perspective, it does feel like the season is basically over because there's no more games here at Everbank Field. We don't get to lock down the bank again, and we don't get to see ourselves.
Love locking down the bank.
Me too. And you don't get to see yourselves on the social snapshot, on the, giant video board. So, it does feel like the season has culminated. And so for the players, especially Blake, he's like, whoa, take a chill pill. We got another
one
game.
One more game left.
Right. I'm preparing for number 99 and everything that comes with that.
All right. Well, the rookie receiver that we want to see get to 40 catches, that would be Mark Kiesley. What's been the most challenging aspect of being a rookie?
Take care of your body is the main thing. I think that's been the biggest thing as far as for me. You know, I got a lot of injuries that I didn't have in college. You know, so I went through experience, you know, it was a down year, beginning year as far as the injuries. But, I mean, I learned how to take care of them injuries. So if they ever come up again, I'd be okay. So I think it's the injuries aspect of it. Learn how to take care of your body, then you'll be all right.
Yeah, and that's what's so interesting about what Marquise had to say. He did deal with injuries at USC that caused a major drop off in production, but they weren't the same injuries that he's dealt with this season. So learning how to take care of your body. I mean, you heard Luke Bowanko and Brandon Linder mention the length of the season when you count those preseason games and how different it is from a college season. You know, you have to learn how to take care of your body. And from Marquise Lee's perspective, that's one of the most challenging things about it.
Well, and especially Marquise is, I remember meeting him in April. I think it was Cleats and Cocktails with you, Jessica. We got a picture with him, and I remember thinking, this is not a big guy. He's only 6 feet, like 190. Right. He's fast as all get out, but he's kind of a smaller guy. So you would expect a little bit more, kind of like Cecil, a little bit more of the soft tissue injuries to plague him throughout the season. But talk about someone who was able to mentally overcome a lot in the beginning of the season and stay focused. And everyone talked about his potential in the offseason. And everyone talked about how excited they were to see this guy just streak across the field. And that's the fun part that we've gotten to see recently.
Well, and Marquise has admitted it himself. It wasn't just injuries. He had to learn how to be a pro. I mean, he really had to learn how to be a professional. And I think he's done that. And now getting to see him out on the field, that's another rookie that I think you spot that potential and what it could look like, and that there really is a lot of hope for this rookie receiving core. I mean, between Marquise Lee, Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns, who's got the potential to finish off the season leading the team in touchdowns, it's looking bright from where we're sitting right now.
It is. And so you've covered the team for 5 years. What was the hardest part about your first season covering the team?
Oh, that's a great question.
Thank you.
Learning to be comfortable and confident enough to ask questions, especially in a group press conference. You know, I came in as this new reporter, hadn't really established any trust or credibility yet. You know, cause I think those things have to be earned. You don't just walk in and automatically get respect from coaches and players. You have to show them that you know what you're doing and you do your research and you ask good questions. And, you know, so from my perspective, walking in to an NFL locker room and an NFL press conference, it was intimidating. And I think for the first, my gosh, maybe even that first season, I don't even know if I asked any questions. I was just like, I don't want to embarrass myself. I don't want people to think I'm asking a stupid question. You know, and it was kind of a bizarre time too, because you knew Del Rio was pretty much
on his way out.
So yeah, but I think that was the biggest thing, just learning how to speak up, learning how to, conduct good interviews, ask good questions, and really develop a rapport with these players. And I mean, it's been great because guys that have been around now, Mercedes and Scobie and Cecil and, you know, these guys that I've worked now with for years.
There's actually not that many of them.
I know. I was just thinking about that. I'm like trying to go through the list. But, you know, obviously such great relationships with those players now. But yeah, that was probably the toughest part about walking in, was just not being intimidated, learning to get comfortable and build that respect and credibility.
Well, and I have been with you in the locker room talking to the players, and I've been with you at press conferences, and I would say that you now have such confidence that you know you're not just prepared, but you're also always excited to learn. And I think that's the best part about watching you talk to the players and see their reaction talking to you. You know, they're not dreading talking to another media person. They're like, all right, Jessica's here. We're going to talk a little college basketball, maybe a little NBA.
Yeah, I'm going to run over and talk to Cecil about the Cavs and how they're doing. All right, let's check in with Mercedes on what movies I should go see this weekend.
And that's the fun part about it. But
no,
all right,
it really is.
We're actually going to get to the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback spotlight question of the day and your answers coming up next. Since in our final segment, we are going to talk to Jaguar General Manager Dave Caldwell. We're going to get into a little holiday spirit with Dave and check into what their family's doing. So that's all coming up next. You're listening to Jaguars Today with Jessica Blaylock, Lauren Brooks on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
I don't want a lot for Christmas.
I think we're supposed to be hearing Christmas music. There it is. I was going to say, I was about to ask Jessica Blaylock to start singing Christmas music, but...
I would have.
I know you would have.
Well, because I can obviously hit all the same notes as Mariah Carey. My very masculine voice.
All right, so welcome back to the Christmas Eve edition of Jaguars Today. Jessica Blaylock, Lauren Brooks, and special guest Dr. Stephen Lucy from JOI, all brought to you by Metro Rooter on a Wednesday. So, Dr. Lucy... I really wanted to spend time just talking about my finger, but I think we should get to a little bit more more pressing injuries like Roy Miller and his knee.
Well, you know, Roy's been a little beat up this year, but he's played great. And I think a couple of games ago he dinged up his knee. So far, our workup looks like he has some meniscus injuries and it seems like it's going to require surgery after the season. I think they were kind of hoping that maybe it would come around, but it doesn't look like at this point that he'll be able to make this week.
When it comes to a knee injury, man, there's so many things that you can hurt. I mean, an MCL, an ACL. What exactly is Roy Miller dealing with right now? I don't know how many specifics you can get into, but is it something that you can easily kind of recover from? What's kind of the process with him?
You know, there are some very serious things. We talk about the ACLs all the time, and then you talk about some of these guys who have more than one ligament injury. Those are the guys that a lot of times don't make it back or don't make it back at the same speed. But these meniscus injuries typically are the ones most of the time you hear about the guys having coming back, and all my patients go, how come I can't come back? And so-and-so played football after 2 weeks and I'm still hurting. So they're all a little different, but these guys compare
themselves to Adrian Peterson.
Absolutely they do. Why can't I be like Adrian?
And Coleman.
Absolutely. And, but these guys, a lot of times, they get rehab all the time, and they can bounce back from these meniscus injuries. Of course, we got issues like Jadeveon Clowney that they all don't bounce back, even in the elite athletes. But these, most of the time, I've had one of these, and I can't even remember which knee it was in. So they do, you know, they come back and do real well.
That's impressive, because I feel like there should be some scarring. No?
Well, you know, in the old days when you slashed them open, there was some scarring, mm-hmm. but doing this stuff with scopes and tiny little incisions, the scarring's really not an issue. It's just, you know, what you hope for is all it is a small cartilage tear. And you know, I've seen them. I've had some come back playing with the Jaguars in 8 or 10 days. But that's on the short end of the stick. Typically, we're looking about 3 weeks or so.
With a cartilage tear, though, I mean... does a tear, and I just don't know much about this, so I'm just kind of curious, and maybe this is more from my perspective, but with a tear, is that something that can fully recover, fully repair itself. I know for me, one time I had a second degree high ankle sprain, and my doctor said it would have been better if you'd broken it because you could have just reset it. It would have recovered. I mean, with tears and things like that, you don't always 100% fully recover. Is a meniscus tear something that can 100% fully recover, or is that something that can be problematic down the road?
I'd say close to 100% with a small tear. In fact, in younger patients, we try to repair them and actually sew them up. But when we do that, it takes a long time to heal. Sometimes those people aren't back to sports for 6 months.
Oh, wow.
But they get a fully restored normal knee. On the other hand, what you're looking for with some of these athletes is a small tear. You just trim it back like you trim your fingernails, and they're ready to go. However, as we've seen with Jadavian, sometimes they have some other injuries, some cartilage chips, or larger tears, and those don't always come back 100%.
And then Dr. Steve and Lucy joining us from JOI. Dr. Lucy, Toby Gerhart, Jaguars running back, suffered a rib contusion. Is there any way that Jessica or I suffer a rib contusion and keep playing in the game?
No. Well, I'm sure you two are very tough ladies. Let's put it that way.
Nope.
But these are very painful things. And, you know, you get, you know, sometimes they have a crack and we don't see them on an x-ray because ribs have got lungs and they overlap. And sometimes.
And that's the scary part, right?
Yeah, sometimes there even is a crack that we don't always see. Sometimes there's some injury to the cartilage where the rib, like, joins the breastbone. If you feel up there, you'll feel where your ribs join the breastbone. Those can be very painful. These things, a lot of times, you just have to see what the player can do. It's a contact sport. You hear about people, well, we'll know Sunday, but we actually take people out on the field and see what they can do. You know, if it's an ankle sprain like Jessica was mentioning, you want to make sure that they can cut, and you want to give it every chance. And sometimes they come out, and before they make them inactive, you know, the coaches will say, well, let me know. And that person will either be active or inactive at that, what is it, an hour and a half before the game. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure Toby will be one of those things. To play football, you got to take a hit, and you can put rib belts and this and that. But when it comes down, it has to be where you can get hit or hit somebody to play the game.
So is that mainly just a pain tolerance issue with something like a rib contusion, or is that something that you want to make sure you don't injure it further? You don't want to cause a further injury by taking another hit and then potentially cracking a rib if it's not already.
Well, with a cracked rib, that's absolutely true. With a bruised rib, you know, you're mostly just worried about him, you know, making him active and having him take a hit the second time he runs the ball, and then he comes out and can't play, and then you have a player that's on the roster that can't contribute. You know, being the last game, you don't have to worry so much about about future problems because you got a long time to heal.
Just go out there and whatever happens,
happens. You got the off season; you can recover then.
That's right.
So, would you say that most players in that circumstance, right before the game, say, "Coach, I'm fine. I can handle it," or to the training staff, the athletic training staff, you know, I'm good to go? Or are there some that actually will say, "I think I should stay out of this one"?
Oh, The whole sport has changed a little bit from 20 years ago, where there was more gladiator mentality to this, and it was like, get out the duct tape, I'm playing no matter what. But I think these players are smarter now. They take care of their bodies better. So it's a combination. We still have the gladiator mentality that I'm going to play no matter what. And in that case, you know, the doctors and the trainers, in the case of the ankle, have to say, well, he's out there, but he doesn't look very good. He can't make the cuts. With the case of a rib, it's really up to the player. You know, how does it feel? And if the player goes, you know, I can't go, most of them, these guys are men. They're smart. And they most of them will tell you, I can't do it this week, but I think I'll be back next week. And, you know, it's not always a doctor clearing or not. A lot of times it's the player has to say, I can do it.
Well, we saw that this past Thursday with Blake Bortles. I mean, he's obviously banged up at this point of the season, and they wanted to run him out there Thursday night a few hours before to see how he was doing, but listed as questionable on the injury report from his own perspective, probably would have listed himself as probable the whole week heading in. But I mean, it's just a situation where you had to see what he was able to do, and luckily he felt fine. It all worked out.
Yeah, and in that case, you know, when you have a big investment, they're going to be making sure it's not just what Blake says.
Right.
They're going to make sure that he can make the drops, take the evasive maneuvers, and you know, he sure looked good on that long run, didn't he?
Yeah,
didn't
he
look
did.
Like his ankle was
did
bothering
not look
him.
Like
so,
it was a problem at
yeah,
all.
Yeah, so
not
that
even
was a good
bit.
Thing.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Lucy. We are just so excited to be here on Christmas Eve. Any Christmas plans for you?
Well, you know, both of my boys have gone to their wives' house, so I've got a few plans, but we've kind of had a couple of successive Christmases, one Sunday night and one last week. So we've kind of got, we're on the third Christmas, so it'll be a little slower.
You're getting your money's worth then.
You're getting your eggnog in.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all good.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Lucy, from Jackson Orthopedic Institute. I know I got to work with JOI throughout the football season as a part of Bishop Kenny. And then, of course, you guys are the doctors for the Jags as well. So we really appreciate it. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you and all the listeners.
Thanks. And all right, so as we count down to Jaguars general manager Dave Caldwell joining us, I did want to take a quick look at the fan feedback spotlight question of the day brought to you by Tom Bush Motors. As far as Facebook goes, here are a couple of the responses, Jessica. We got Blake Bortles or Marquise Lee. We got our MVP over the past 5 years in Josh Scobie. We got a Sue Jaguar jersey 2015. What do you think about that one?
Oh, I don't know about that.
Telvin Smith, future star in this league, and I get to rep my Noles. We got another Telvin Smith, love his speed and passion. We also got a Jackson DeVille, and then finally
okay,
from...
Okay, I love that.
Yeah, from Nick Carnes we got, I'd say either Josh Scobie, Marquise Lee, Alan Hearns, Derek Marks, Telvin Smith, Blake Bortles, or Denard Robinson. That's a lot of choices. So you already picked yours, Denard Robinson. I already picked mine in Derek Marks. And then let's see what we got from Twitter. We got
some Twitter responses. A personalized one for Duval Doom from Josh. He wants either Senderic's, Telvin Smith's, or Colvin's. Hashtag the future is bright. Hashtag we finally have a dominant defense. Hashtag is 2015 here yet. Close.
Very close.
Close. But one more. One more to go in this season.
And also from Brandon, Colvin's would make me jump for joy. Rooted for him since the draft. So
Very cool.
I just love that whole story, as I've said several times. One thing I did want to mention, if you are on Twitter, please check out the picture that the official account of the Jaguars tweeted out a little bit ago.
Oh, my God.
Of Johnny O when he was younger. It will be in the Ozone mailbag today. And
early Christmas, everyone.
I just have to say it might be one of the best pictures I've ever seen. It's John with really long hair in a greased t-shirt holding up a trophy with the classic face that he always makes.
I'm going to guess that trophy is for pure awesomeness based on that greased t-shirt.
You know, I was going to guess it was for bowling, but I think pure awesomeness wins.
Oh, bowling would be solid too, but then he would be wearing the greased 2 t-shirt.
That is very true. All right. When we do return, we are hoped to be joined by Jaguars general manager Dave Caldwell. We're so excited to talk to him on this Christmas Eve edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Welcome back to a Metro Rooter Wednesday Jaguars Today Christmas Eve edition. Jessica Whalock, Lauren Brooks, alongside by far the most famous person we've had in the studio yet today. Sorry, Ryan O'Halloran. In Jaguars General Manager Dave Caldwell. Dave, thanks so much for joining us. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Playing Secret Santa today.
What are you giggling about over there?
That song. There's so many different versions of it. I mean, there's Bruce Springsteen. You could probably get like a Dean Martin. And I guess we're going with the Teletubbies version? I'm not sure. Kids Bop, okay.
You are totally hating on producer Tyler on his second day ever producing
Tyler,
the show.
Tyler, you're doing a fabulous job. Well done.
Hopefully he comes back for a third.
All right, Dave, what are the plans for Christmas? I mean, obviously, NFL season is nonstop. That continues with there being a road game to end the season in Houston. So what does Christmas kind of look like for you guys? I know you have tomorrow off, luckily.
Yeah, we were fortunate with the Thursday night game to adjust the schedule and not lose a day of practice. And Coach Bradley took advantage of that with the coaching staff. And so we'll get out of here at a reasonable hour, and then we'll go on with our kind of our Christmas traditions a little bit and have a good day at home with the family today and tomorrow.
So do y'all open one present on Christmas Eve?
Well, my Christmas tradition goes back probably from my days in college where I have to do my shopping today.
And, I'm right there with you.
So I got to go shopping, and a good friend of mine, we used to shop at in Buffalo when we were younger, and you know, stop and have a couple of drinks and do our shopping, and then go home and celebrate Christmas. Well, today I'm just gonna do the shopping and then maybe stop in and have a beer. And
how about I fly, you buy? Does that work for Christmas shopping today?
That's what I did all week with Joelle. She did a great job for the staff here, and Dana, my assistant. They
awesome.
They did all the odds and ends for us this year.
Oh, you have a young son. He's a couple years younger than my nephew. I know I've been shopping around for Lego sets and video games, and you know what are the hot toys this season that you've had to keep your eye out for?
Well, he's a builder. He loves his Legos, and he kind of goes in and out different phases. He was really into Legos about a year ago, and then fortunate for us that he's back into them. So that's big. The Wii is big. He's not a real big gamer, but he likes the action where he can play sports on the TV. So those are two of the big ones that I think hopefully Santa will bring for him.
I could not believe, by the way, I'm sorry, Lauren.
Mm-mm, you're good.
I can't believe how expensive Lego sets are. I mean, I remember playing with Legos. I liked building things when I was younger, but it was just a big bucket of these multicolored Lego blocks. I mean, now I went to look for, I think, some Star Wars sets. They're upwards of like $120 if you want to build the Millennium Falcon. I'm like, this is crazy that Legos have become so out of control.
It is, but the instructions are great. So when we were kids, they didn't come with instructions.
You just had to use your imagination. Yeah. What do I want to build today?
I have never been into building anything, which is also probably why I cannot put anything together, and I require the help of other people, including other girls, to put my shoe racks together.
I guess you won't have a future as a GM, so we don't have to worry about you taking my
yeah,
job.
That is absolutely correct.
We'll just talk about it. I do want to get to a couple players in particular with you. Let's start out with Sendarek Marks. Came out last night that he was voted as an alternate to the Pro Bowl. What a season he's had. And I think the coolest part about it, this is something that Gus spoke to, was the fact that you guys brought in Sendarek. He played really well. He was rewarded with a contract. But he's almost outperformed since signing his new deal, and that's not always something that you see when you give players a deal.
Sure, and I'm sure he would probably tell you he's outperformed it too. But he's done a great job, and I think that's a great tribute to our coaching staff and the players that our vision for the players that we want to bring in here and guys that are self-motivated. We noticed that about Sarek right away, that he was a guy that we wanted to bring in as one of our building blocks for the future. But a lot of credit to him and the defensive line, and he's had a great year, and he hopefully follows up next year and he gets on that first ballot in the Pro Bowl. And a lot of our guys that we brought in, you know, Ziggy Hood, Chris Clemens, Red Bryant, all those guys, you know, we paid a good portion of money and they all performed very well. So we feel good about guys like that. And those are the type of guys we're going to reward here in this organization. And a guy like Roy Miller, who we just rewarded because he does the right things on and off the field. And really football is his first priority, and he's self-motivated. So the money should not change him.
What's the hardest month as far as time wise for you in the off season? What is it? April? Is it May?
I would say gearing up here, believe it or not, January and February.
Okay, but the Senior Bowl.
Senior Bowl, Combine, the start of free agency. And so it's different for us on the personnel side. Coaches, you know, they can kind of take a little bit of time off where we're really starting to ramp up here. We just had our December meetings with our scouts, and we're ready to go into full mode into free agency in the draft.
Speaking of the Senior Bowl and a guy that made an impression there this past year, Aaron Colvin, obviously suffered a devastating injury, but there was something that you guys saw in him and you wanted to bring him here. You were able to get him. What have you seen from Aaron Colvin, especially considering the way that he's really been able to transition after missing such a huge chunk of time? I mean, he has been a playmaker right away.
Sure, and just like we talked about Sendarek and the D-line that we brought in, he's a very tough-minded kid, and we saw it in the first day and a half how he approached his business at the Senior Bowl, how disappointed he was when he got injured. And his time here from the day he got here, he rehabbed like nobody I've ever seen before rehab. And he had a couple of setbacks, but he never let it bother him. Very tough-minded kid, and that's what you want out of a corner. We were fortunate with the Senior Bowl last year with him to get to know him in that day and a half, and it really kind of helped us pick him in the fourth round. And same with guys like Telvin Smith and Chris Smith, who we were able to coach there. And without that week of coaching there, you know, we don't know if we would have pulled the trigger on him.
Has Telvin Smith played beyond your expectations?
Yeah, you talk about a fifth round pick coming in and doing what he's done, especially the last 4 weeks since he's been a starter. He's averaging close to 10 tackles a game. He's making impact plays. He's got 2 sacks. He's got interception. He makes plays on the ball.
Such energy, too.
Yeah, great energy. And so we knew he was a playmaker. We just didn't know how he was with his size and knowing that he was going to need a year or two to get bigger. It really hasn't affected him too much this year, and his arrow is just going to be pointing up next year.
I can only imagine how tired he got of that question about his weight.
Well, and that was everyone's. I think that was everyone's concern heading in. You know, Telvin is built much more like a corner than a linebacker per se, but it seems like just his athleticism, his energy, everything else that he brings to the field has more than made up for what he may lack in size.
Sure, and I've been fortunate enough to be around. We drafted Cato June in the fifth round when I was in Indianapolis, and he was about 210-pound linebacker. Gus was around Derek Brooks, who came out at about the same weight that Telvin did, but Telvin's got a 6'3" frame on him. So he's got a great growth potential, and we don't let him forget about it here either. We were just talking about it yesterday in the practice field. I said, tell him what weight you can come in at next year. And he says it doesn't matter. He plays like he's 245 anyway, so.
So do the coaches want him to gain weight?
You know, we want it to be natural. And most players, after they're out of college for a year or 2 years, and now they actually have money to buy food, and now they have the training table. We hired a nutritionist here, Mindy, in the offseason, who does a great job with them and setting a plan for their offseason. So he'll naturally gain weight. We saw it with Denard Robinson last year. He gained 20 pounds. So we think we don't know what it will be, but you know, it'll be a slow, steady gain where it doesn't really affect his athleticism.
And I know, like Luke Jokel, they want him to gain weight too, right?
Yeah,
in
well,
in a good way.
Luke, we kind of, when we drafted him and then he got hurt, we kind of put him on a 3-year plan. We didn't want to put too much weight on him with the ankle that he broke last year, and so we were a little bit cautious this year. So Tom Maslinski had Joe Thomas in Cleveland, and same type of program that Joe was on in Cleveland is what Milo has Luke on here. So it's going to be a slow, steady gain, and just making sure that he gains the right weight the right way, and it doesn't affect his athleticism too.
We're joined by Jaguars general manager Dave Caldwell. All right, we talked a little bit about Telvin and Colvin, two rookies that are contributing on the defensive side of the ball. Looking at the offense, obviously when you're starting as much youth as you are, there's going to be some growing pains, but looking at a guy like Allen Robinson, who had played really well until he got hurt, you know, kind of Blake's progression, learning and getting in there and actually getting playing time to be out on the field and how much that's going to help him down the road. A guy like Marquise Lee, who's seeming to find his stride out on the field. Yeah, growing pains, but there's got to be a lot of excitement from y'all's perspective of seeing these guys go out there and grow together.
Sure, and there is, and this offseason will be big for those guys, and every young kid that comes in. I've said this before, that their biggest jump usually is from year to 1 year to year two. Sometimes it takes the guys up maybe an extra year to year two to year three. But for what those guys have come in and done as rookies, it's hard to do. And even at week 15 and 16, Marquise last week playing his best ball of the season, a lot of times rookies will hit their rookie wall. And so we feel optimistic about it, and you know they got to take care of their business in the offseason and obviously stay healthy next year. Allen Robinson was a shame for what happened to him.
Right.
I know there's been a lot of media coverage of the rookie wide receiving class, and at the time he got hurt, I believe he was actually leading all of them in receptions, which is a great tribute to him. And he's a guy that didn't even go through the offseason. He only practiced 6 days before our opening game against Philly.
Right.
And so I think his ceiling's high. He only turned 21, I think, early into this season. And that's the one thing we talk a lot about these guys is we're really playing, and not an excuse, but really a decision of the direction of this organization, that we're playing with guys that should still be in college. You know, Blake should be in his senior year. Luke Jokel, for all intents and purposes, could still be playing at Texas A&M. Marquise Lee should be in his senior year at USC. Allen Robinson should be in his senior year, not only their senior year, but their fourth year, which a lot of those guys did not redshirt.
And Allen Hurns, I mean, a guy who went undrafted, and he's leading the team in touchdowns.
Yeah.
And he's a guy who's, I think he's done a nice job, too, of especially down the middle of the field. Some of the plays he makes when he knows he's about to get hit, it's impressive.
He's very tough. Along with all three of those young receivers, they're very tough-minded guys, and they're not afraid of contact. They're not afraid of making the tough catch. But Allen Hurns is a guy that, believe it or not, our scouts actually had good grades on him. But when we took two receivers early in the draft and we had to fill their needs, we weren't able to draft them. So we were aggressive after free agency, and he's a great kid, and you're right, he's very tough. And Brian Robinson just told me he's on pace, if he has a does certain things this week to break some records for undrafted rookies.
That's awesome.
Well done, Allen Hurns. Yeah. I think that, to me, is one of the most exciting parts about this team, is that what y'all were able to do with what you had, it, really everyone has lived up to or exceeded expectations. And that's something that is obviously credit to you and the scouting staff.
Well, really, scouting staff, but you have to look at our coaching staff, too. I've said this before, Gus Bradley has probably had the most difficult job in the NFL the last 2 years with the amount of youth that we've brought in and the turnover on the roster. It is not easy for coaches staff to come in and say, okay, we're going to count on these eight rookies to start.
Guys, throw me a veteran.
Yeah, right? and not only that, but we also bring in a guy like Zane Beatles who's just learning our system, too. And as the season has progressed, he's played better football. So it wasn't like we just had guys here and they knew the system. Everybody was learning it as we go. And we have a young coaching staff, too, and they're learning as we go. And that was a little bit of our model of you know, I was a first-time general manager, Gus is a first-time head coach, that we were going to give guys their first opportunity to do it. And knowing that in years to come, year three, four, five, when we're really ready to compete with the big dogs in the NFL, that, you know, they were going to learn on the move here.
Well, I have to say thank you again for joining us, and I wish you the best of luck in the Christmas shopping, because I'm right there with
I know, we all might run into each other at the town center later
on. I will be avoiding the town
center. I have a plan, so we'll see how I execute it.
Let's get a little bit of, can you give us any of the
details? Not only do I have to do Christmas shopping, but I have to go food shopping for dinner tomorrow, too.
All right, I'm going to definitely give you some advice. I would not go to the Publix at the Town Center just because I feel like it's going to be a zoo. So right. Maybe a Publix somewhere.
I have a spot, but my mother-in-law is probably listening, so she better be making dessert.
What kind of dessert does she make?
Well, it better be a good one.
All right, well, thank you so much, Dave, for spending some time with us. And Merry Christmas to you and your family, and best of luck this Sunday against the Texans.
I can't wait to hear about little Dave opening his presents and how excited he is.
Hopefully it was a good boy.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Thank you, everyone, to listening to the Christmas Eve edition of Jaguars today. It has been such a pleasure being here. We will check in with Chad Scott and Ryan Bonifant coming up next. And, of course, thanks to our producer, Tyler Devitt, for taking over the reins from me yesterday. And we'll be back right here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.